Well, the purpose of this lesson is, first of all, this, that honest and straightforward and truthful language is being so corrupted in the world, perhaps more so than it has ever been in our lifetimes. Many people lie or deceive as a matter of practice, as a way to do business. It is becoming more natural, less stigmatized, more normalized. Based on the track record that it's given to us, it is more realistic to assume our elected officials are lying than they are to tell the truth. Many, if not all, TV sitcoms and dramas involve lying as a means of moving the plot along. Usually a sitcom begins with or opens up with someone lying, and then they spend the rest of the sitcom dancing around that lie, and then finally the truth comes out, everybody laughs, and, you know, reset to zero. Or so it seems. People lie about their age, they lie about their income, where they've been, what they're doing, their infidelities, or fidelities, as you might say, in marriage. Social media is filled with false projections of so-called happy people in happy marriages with happy families, when the reality is a lot of these people are very unhappy and depressed and spiritually lost. They are deceiving people into thinking that they're something that they're not. And that form of deception is another form of lying. So lying and deception and cheating and dishonesty in any form is increasingly common, often as a means for coping, advancing oneself, that is, or gaining financial profit in the secular world. Some people are so accustomed to lying that they are oblivious that they're even doing so. We call these pathological liars, or just simply chronic liars, people that just lie as a matter of course, as a matter of doing business, so to speak. The problem here, this is the second reason for this lesson, is that this habit, this practice, has been slowly and steadily creeping into the churches. Christians are giving false information. They're withholding right information or critical information, or they're just flat out lying to one another as a means of projecting themselves in a good light or to protect themselves from being seen or exposed as failing in one area or another. This lesson is not to point fingers. I'm not singling people out. Even if I'm looking at you right now, don't get upset, okay? I'm just trying to make eye contact. But at the same time, that this is a problem. This is a problem that is not, this congregation is not immune to. Let me say it that way. So it is to condemn, this lesson is to condemn any form of lying or dishonesty among Christians, simply because it contradicts God's own holy nature. And if it makes you feel any better, as I was going through this lesson and writing it, I felt a great sense of, you know, self-reflection here, and very uncomfortable. It's very unsettling. When you start talking about honesty as it really is, and truthfulness and all that, you start examining yourselves, and if you're like me, you find yourself a bit uncomfortable with what you find. So it's not just you, it's all of us, in the respect that we need to look at this. The title is An Honest Christian, which is really kind of a tongue-in-cheek approach to this because there should be no other kind of Christian but an honest one. And yet dishonest Christians do exist, and if they continue in that practice, then they are in sin. The shepherds here, Jim and myself, have been talking about this as it relates to our conversations with people in the congregation and even knowing those outside the congregation. This is becoming an increasing problem, one that we cannot be silent about, and that's why we're dealing with it right now. Last week in our lesson, To Christ Be True, we did talk about integrity. That means to be firm in your word, upright in your character, steadfast in your faith. There's a sense of stability there and firmness. In essence, integrity has to do with being honest. But it's not just honesty by itself, because no one is righteous or saved only because they're honest. You can be out in the world and be very honest with yourself and others and still be very wrong with God. Okay? So don't think that just because someone is honest that they're automatically a Christian. What we're really talking about is honesty with regard to your soul and your standing with God. And thus, by implication there, there's an active pursuit of what it takes to live honestly. So it's not just something that you're being honest about, it's about how you live honestly, okay? Which has to do with your integrity and your character and your steadfastness. If you look at a dictionary meaning there, honest or honesty has multiple shades of meaning. And these are quotes from the dictionary. Not disposed to cheat or defraud. Not deceptive or fraudulent. Dependable, reliable, without pretensions, which means no ultimate ulterior motive, especially a deceptive one. Something characterized or marked by truth. So those are some dictionary definitions. All of them, though, if you think about it, adhere to a single, fixed, authoritative standard. Now, the dictionary doesn't define that standard. That's not its job. But they all do allude to or really refer to a fixed standard. Because it's impossible to talk about honesty without having a fixed standard of what we're being honest about and for what reason we're being honest. So there has to be some kind of authority there. In the New Testament, you'll seldom find the word honest, at least in the version that I'm familiar with, most often using the New American Standard Version. It's hardly found there. But it is synonymous with the word genuine or without hypocrisy. You do see the same Greek words being used there, translated into those other words. In Philippians 1, verse 10, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 1, they use the word sincere, which also can be translated literally honest. And the Greek word for that means literally judged by sunlight, as when you hold up a jar of water or oil or honey or something liquid like that to the sun to see whether there's any corruption or impurities in that. So that translucent liquid or whatever it is that you can see the impurities in there when you hold it up to the light. And that gives you an idea of exactly what God does for us. He holds us up to the light. He holds us up to the light to see if there are any impurities or imperfections or defects there in us. And that's not a bad thing. It needs to be done. We actually want to be exposed by the light in order to know what the darkness is in us, the impurities, so that we can deal with them or have them dealt with. So God tests our souls by holding us up to the light, but God's not the only one that can do that. We can hold each other up to the light, so to speak, as long as the light is God's word and not our own our own expectations, I should say. Okay? So I'm not using Chad's standard to hold you up next to. We're using the word of God to hold us up to. And we can hold ourselves up to that light, which is really what we're supposed to be doing every time we take the Lord's Supper. When Paul says, examine yourselves before you eat the bread and drink the cup, what he's really saying in so many words is, hold yourself up to the light and see whether or not you are being honest with yourself. And see whether or not you're being sincere. See whether or not you're being who you say you are. Honesty is directly linked in the Bible to faithfulness, trustworthiness, and loyalty. I know that's no surprise to you, but I'm saying it anyway. Faithfulness in the New Testament often draws the same conclusions as honesty. It is a critical factor in determining whether you are a believable or credible person. So if you're not being honest, well, you're also not being faithful. And if you're not being honest and faithful, then you're not trustworthy. You see how that goes down there. But if you are being honest, and we're talking about honesty to God, what he says, if you're being honest and sincere there, then you are faithful and you are trustworthy. Because no dishonest person can masquerade as an honest Christian. Faithfulness is also one of the fruits of the Spirit. Galatians 5:22 tells us that. So it's not just a nice thing to be. In other words, to be honest. And honesty is not just a nice thing to have. Like, if you have it, it's great. But if you don't, no big deal. Actually, it's a necessity. It's something that we have to have if we are going to be walking by the Spirit and producing the kind of fruit that the Spirit needs us to produce. In other words, really characteristics or character that cannot be produced outside of the Spirit. what we're saying here is that even a dishonest person can tell the truth once in a while, but they don't become truthful people. A Christian, however, if he follows the Spirit, will become truthful within and without. All Christians are expected to be honest all the time because they're being led by the Spirit and following him. Many Christians think that honesty is only about telling the truth when you're asked or being truthful in your dealings with one another. And of course, these things are, well, true. That is what honesty has to deal with, but it's not limited to that. The New Testament language or usage goes well beyond that. The New Testament language says don't just tell the truth, but in essence, walk in the truth and even be filled with the truth. That's really how honesty plays out in the New Testament language or the New Testament descriptions of what it is. We could look at it kind of in a backward approach to understand it negatively, like what honesty is not, to help us to understand better what it is. 1 John's a great place to go to for that. 1 John talks about liars. In fact, 5 times liars are mentioned in 1 John, the opposite of being honest and truthful. These people walk and talk and believe in contrast to the truth, to the light, or to Christ himself. It's not limited to telling lies, not the way that John describes it. It identifies people who don't conform to Christ, but rather conform to the world. Or we could say that they pretend to conform to Christ, but in reality, they are conforming to the world. These are the people that John targets here when he talks about liars. People who pose or masquerade as Christ followers, but are in reality following something or someone else. That's not hard to find, is it? I mean, it's not hard to find that out in the world, masqueraders and hypocrites and so on. Unfortunately, it's not terribly hard to find those even within the brotherhood if we look hard enough, if we were to take every person and start holding them up to the light. That becomes a little bit disarming there and unsettling. So there's some examples of what John picks up on. Chapter 1, verse 10, for example, he talks about a liar is someone who denies his own sin when, in fact, God says his sin exists. Actually, John says that when we lie about the reality of our sin, we make God out to be a liar because he's saying we're sinful and we're saying, oh, no, I'm not. So we make it out to be like God is the one telling the lie when, in fact, we are the one who's lying in that scenario. And so honesty, of course, would be the opposite of that. Whatever God says about you or me or us, we agree with that. We agree with God's assessment of us. Secondly, he talks about those who claim to know Jesus there in John 2, verse 4, 1 John 2, 4, I should say, but they don't obey his commandments. Someone might say, well, which commandments? And the answer would be, well, any of them or all of them. It really doesn't matter. It's interesting how people become very selective about which commandments they're going to keep and which ones seem expendable. But in God's position there are no expendable commandments. They're all necessary. They all need to be kept. So the opposite of that then, going on the positive side, would be an honest person is one who obeys the commandments of God. At least that, right? And that's not the entirety of honesty, but he has to be able to do that. 1 John 2, verse 22, he talks about one who denies that Jesus and the Christ are one and the same, therefore denying the divinity of Christ. He's not a divine person. He does not have a divine nature. He's a good prophet, a good man, a good preacher, and so on, but he's not God. And there are those, even in the so-called Christian religion, who do maintain that. I don't want to give names here, but they're out there, okay? So this is not something that's just related to the ancient world and the problems that they had with Gnosticism and so on. That's usually not an issue amongst ourselves, but it's something that John mentions, and so we're mentioning it. John chapter 4 and verse 20, he talks about a liar as one who claims to love God but hates his fellow believer. And the word hate here in 1 John's usage is to purposely withhold love. It doesn't mean you go out and spit on them and blow up their mailbox and, you know, put graffiti on their car or something like that. It's not outward showing of hate. It's rather the refusal to give that person the godly love that he has given you, that God has given you. And this is an issue within the brotherhood. We may not be actively hating, but it's not hard to find Christians who are withholding their love from their fellow believers. Again, if we were to scrutinize closely by holding those people up to the Word of God. And so honesty would be to love God and to love his people. That would be the honest approach there. And finally, in chapter 5, verse 10 of 1 John, it's one who refuses to believe in the Son of God and again makes God out to be a liar. Now here's a person who's denying what God says himself about his Son. And this person's saying, no, that's not who your Son is. And then makes God out to be the one lying when in fact it's the person himself. So what is the believer to do? The honest person is to believe what God says about his Son or anything else. Believe what God says. So John's point here is that dishonest is not just those who don't tell the truth, but rather a Christian who refuses to live the truth. That's what a dishonest person is. Someone who refuses to live truthfully, who refuses to walk in the truth, who refuses to live by that truth, who refuses to walk in the light. Anyone can claim to be honest and sincere. People do it all the time. That doesn't make them right with God. In order to be right with God and claim support the claim, there has to be evidence. There has to be demonstration. There has to be proofs. And you say, well, that's not fair that you should expect that from someone. And I would say that's not a good way to reason this. You want God to be honest with you, and you expect God to provide proofs of his honesty, which, by the way, he has done so many, many times in the Bible. You want Jesus to be honest with you, and you expect Jesus to demonstrate proofs of his honesty, which he has done many, many times. You expect the apostles to be honest with you, and so on. You see where this is going. I expect you to be honest, and you should expect me to be honest. But we can't just take our word for it. Over time, there has to be something of substance, visible, demonstrable proof of that honesty. And the reason you can't take my word for it or me take yours for it is because words by themselves aren't substitutes for character. Words should be the product of our character. We're speaking in this ideally in a good way and not the substance of it. You think about what people are saying here today. A lot of people in the world are saying they basically don't judge. They want to be regarded as being truthful regardless of the proof. My experience, by the way, just a little side note, is people who go around saying, don't judge, don't judge, don't judge, are some of the most narrow-minded, bigoted, and judgmental people I've ever met. But they don't see themselves that way. What they really are saying is, I don't want you to challenge me with the truth. I don't want you to expose what I'm doing. I just want to believe what I believe and do what I'm doing. And the only way that I want to listen to you is if you validate what I'm doing as being right. If you've ever seen a Facebook post that says, no disagreement, basically. Don't write anything if you disagree with me. And these are the people we're talking about. Only write good things about me. Wow, there's an honest assessment of a person, right? Only write good things. You know, the honest people, though, they have nothing to hide. Judge me all you want to, as long as you're using the right standard for judging. Judge me all you want to. And I have the right to judge you too, as long as I am using the correct standard too. Doesn't John 7:24 say that? Don't judge by appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. Well, what is a righteous judgment? It's a judgment that is based upon what God says is true, and not what Chad says is true or what you say is true. So these people that are saying don't judge often just don't want you to expose them for who they are. But here's the other thing. Avoiding all criticism of who you are doesn't make you an honest person. It doesn't vindicate you as being truthful. In fact, I would say strongly that this can keep you from being honest, because it keeps you from comparing yourself to this fixed authoritative standard. In other words, you're blinded to the truth because you don't want to look at what the truth is. You just turn away from it. You put your hands over your own eyes. You're just refusing to see what is true about you, and therefore there's no accountability there. So being dishonest is not hard to find in people in general. And sadly, I hate to say this, but it's kind of a default as a defense mechanism in our human nature. I'm not saying everyone's dishonest by nature. What I'm saying is when we are pushed into a corner or being exposed or being challenged, we tend to fabricate or misrepresent or, you know, basically lie about who we are and what we're doing. Being dishonest must not be taken lightly, no matter how socially acceptable it becomes, no matter how many sitcoms welcome it as part of their plot formula, because it identifies us with Satan. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 10, you see that liars are lumped in with, and then Paul has a pretty lengthy list of people, those who are lawless, rebellious, ungodly, sinners, unholy, profane, murderers, fornicators, homosexuals, kidnappers, perjurers. That's not my list. That's Paul's list. And liars are in there with that. That's an awful list to be on. In any case, just an awful list to be on. Revelation 21 verse 8, liars are included with those who are cowardly and monstrous, which is what abominable means, or unbelieving, or murderers, or immoral, or sorcerers, or idolaters. That's an equally awful list to be on. In other words, dishonesty is not just something that, you know, you just have to grapple with once in a while. It's something that will decay or corrupt or ruin your soul. It's not something you want to dabble in or play with or, you know, experiment with. It's something you want to stay clear away from. Someone says, well, telling little white lies is perfectly harmless. We've all grown up with that. You see that on TV shows, too. I remember watching many years ago, Little House on the Prairie, one of the cleanest, morally cleanest shows you could ever imagine here. And what does Pa do in the show there? If you don't know who he is, read the books. So Pa actually tells a little white lie and then laughs about it. And everyone laughs about it, like, oh, it's harmless. It's no big deal. It's like, what? You can think little white lies are harmless if you want to, but God says that it's lying, and God's word is what settles the matter. Or do you dare call God a liar? I mean, that's where we're at with that. So all this begs a question more directly. What does honesty look like beyond what we've looked at already? What makes a Christian an honest Christian besides one, or as opposed to one who is self-deceived? There's some basic things to think about. And again, this is pretty basic. You can go much more in depth if we needed to. First, there has to be an agreement between the gospel, which serves as our personal code of conduct, and how we live our life. Now, I'm talking about Christians here, right? Because an unbeliever wouldn't be held to the gospel's requirements or expectations. But this is what John was saying here. There has to be agreement with what you believe and how you live here. And we see this in other places too. Ephesians 4 verse 1, Paul says, I implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've been called. In other words, you need to walk or live consistently with how you've been called in the first place. You were not called to be dishonest people. You were called to be people of integrity and honest and straightforward and faithful. Here's another verse, Romans 13 verse 13 and 14. Let's actually look that one up because there's a little bit more to say on that one. And it wouldn't fit on the screen. Okay, that's really what it came down to. So Romans chapter 13, verse 13 and 14, Paul says, let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy, but, in contrast, put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lusts. This making provision for sin is really kind of the opposite of sin trying to reach out and tempt you. It's kind of like you reaching out to tempt sin. That's kind of what that is doing there. Like sin is sitting there and you're poking the bear, right? And that's what making provision for sin is, by courting it, by seeing how close you can get to it, by making an allowance for it. This is dishonest for anyone who is a citizen of the kingdom. Now, have I done this before? Yes, I have. Have you done this before? Probably. Statistically, I think probably most of us here have done this. It's not a good thing to do. It's not something that we should be proud of or write off as being, it's no big deal. The second thing to think about here is there has to be agreement between what you say and what you do. Not just what you believe, but now what you say. Your words mean something, as we've been talking about in our James class. There has to be a verbal profession, that agrees with the visible behavior that you are projecting. John obviously has much to say on this in 1 John. So does James, as we saw. So does 1 Peter, especially chapter 3 that was read for us there in the reading. Chapter 3, verse 8 through 16 there, he talks about that. You cannot be of the light if you're practicing deeds of darkness. It just stands to reason. If you tell anyone or everyone, I'm a Christian, that needs to be backed up with supporting evidence, not just once or twice, but consistently, over time, as a matter of practice. This is what we should see in you, as you should see it in me too. The third thing here, tell the truth. I know that's kind of a duh thing, but don't just tell God's truth. You need to tell your truth. So telling God's truth is usually in the form of proclaiming God, evangelism, reciting scriptures, and so on. Telling your truth is really being sincere about who you really are, what you really did, and your real motives and intentions. It's going to get a little uncomfortable in here just for a minute, okay? Bear with me. For example, if you do not do something that you promised to do, and then you gave the excuse that, oh, I was busy, when the fact is you forgot, then you just lied to someone. You were dishonest about your intentions and about what happened there. You weren't really busy, you just forgot. That's what you should have said. Or if you were invited to go somewhere and you don't want to go and you say, I can't make it, when the fact is you could make it, you just didn't want to make it, now you're lying. You're not being truthful about your intentions there. If you're not where you're supposed to be when you say you're supposed to be there, then you're lying. If you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, but you say you're doing it, well, then that's lying. It's dishonesty. If you say something to me or anyone else, when they call you on something, you say, hey, I'm working on it, right? Like, when church leaders ask people in the congregation, hey, you know, there's this thing going on in your life, and the defensive thing is, I'm working on it. Well, if you're not really working on it, you're just lying. You've lied about what you're doing or really what you're not doing there. You're being dishonest. If you say that you're sorry when you're really not, well, then you're not sorry. You're just lying about being sorry. If you say that you forgive someone when they ask you, and you say, I forgive you, when in your heart you still hold them guilty, you're lying about who you are, what you're doing. Anytime you falsify your intentions, you're being dishonest. Anytime you're asked a direct question, but you give misleading answers, you're being dishonest. So now we know that there has to be some telling of the truth, right? Your truth, not, again, God's truth. Of course, we're to tell God's truth, but there has to be telling your truth as well. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 37, Jesus says your answer should be yes or it should be no, and anything beyond that is of evil. Some translators include the word one after the word evil because there is an implication that you're identifying with Satan rather than with Christ or with God. So you're of the evil one when you start, you know, waffling around the answer and giving some kind of perception of an answer rather than just the direct yes or no. And we don't want to identify with Satan. What is Satan? Well, John 8:44, Jesus himself, of all people, calls Satan a liar. That's one of his chief characteristics, is a liar. And when we lie or are dishonest in any way or falsify our intentions or say that we will when we won't, or say that we did when we didn't, or say that, you know, we will be there when we know that we won't be there, or anything like that, we are just identifying with Satan. And we want to identify with Christ. We have to identify with Christ. For Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, laying aside all falsehood, really, any kind of falsehood, whatever is of Satan, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Again, speaking of Christians, not the world in general. But lying here is something that has to be laid aside. Euphemism for get rid of it, put it to death. Speak the truth, because truth is the language of Christians. It is the language of the citizens of the kingdom. Lying has no place in the kingdom. Fourth, make a conscious and deliberate effort to represent the truth of whatever it is that's happening as best as you can, without leaving out those, again, critical details. For example, this is a fictitious example. If this really happened to you, I didn't know that, okay? But suppose you're messing with your phone while you're driving, and you hit another car that pulled out in front of you, but what you tell the police is, well, they pulled out, and that's why I hit them. Which is true, partly. It's also true that you were messing with your phone, which probably contributed to the accident. But you left that part out, because you wanted to make yourself in a good light, and you certainly didn't want to be culpable or, you know, guilty of something when someone else could have taken the fall. Those kinds of scenarios fail to give the full story, which is what you're supposed to give, right? When you're asked to be a witness in a court of law, don't you put your hand on a Bible and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Well, do you have to actually put your hand on a Bible in order to be truthful? Shouldn't we be truthful? Shouldn't our hand always be on the Bible, so to speak? I mean, as Christians, isn't that what we're expected to do? To always have our hand on the Bible, always telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That doesn't mean you give up every private nuance of whatever it is that you're dealing with, because some things don't need to be said. We're talking about critical information that has a direct bearing on how a person perceives what has happened. Christians ought to be trusted to give the full story, not just the parts that allow them to save face. I will tell you, no names, no times, no nothing else. But Jim and I have confronted certain members in this congregation, and we were told certain things by those members. And come to find out, we weren't told the whole story by those members. Now, those members might not think that they lied to us. They certainly weren't being honest with us. So call it whatever you want to, but that's a problem. And we cannot tolerate that amongst ourselves. We should not tolerate that amongst ourselves. Your words should be trusting. Because you have a history of telling the truth, you should be trustworthy. That's what trustworthy means. Finally, Christians ought not just to say what is true when they're called upon or questioned. They ought to be truthful and honest people. You say, well, why so? Well, I'll just hold up Christ as our model example here. 1 Peter 2:21 and 22 says that we've been called for the purpose of suffering for what is right. If you look at the verses before that, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you, meaning me, you and all of us, an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. Old versions say no guile, no corruption, no deception. Remember, what comes out of your mouth is an indicator of your character. Nothing bad came out of Jesus' mouth, because his life was filled with truth. What he did and what he said was all truthful, nothing false about him. Ideally, in other words, the best course of action is that you and I ought to be the same way. And when you are, then you rightly represent the Lord to the world, even to your own hurt. You suffer for what is right. You told the truth. And you might have to pay the consequences sometimes for telling the truth, right? But you told the truth because that's the right thing to do. Christ's gospel makes no accommodation for falsifying situations, for just making up stories, for outright lying, Quite the opposite. It teaches us to be upright and honest and straightforward and factual, just like you want God to be with you, like I want God to be with me. And so then the question, are you, I'm speaking to Christians here, are you an honest Christian? This is a question that deserves some self-reflection. You are not automatically honest or trustworthy just because you are a Christian. Now, I have to tell you, I wish it worked that way, but it doesn't. So what kind of track record do you have? What kind of track record have you provided for everyone else to see? We're talking about over time, not just yesterday or last week, but over time. The thing is, the world doesn't care if you lie. If you tell little white lies or big black lies or any color in between, it just doesn't care. Because now you're identifying with the world and you're befriending it. Because the world chooses to lie as a matter of doing business. But we're told in Scripture, James 4:4, for example, that everyone who befriends the world becomes or makes himself an enemy of God. So that means that a decision has to be made, but a decision also has to be kept and honored. You have to decide who you're going to befriend. Here's an interesting passage. In Revelation 14, verse 3 through 5, talks about really the church on earth. That's who the 144,000 is. We have the church on earth that is represented in this very visionary, symbolic scenario. And it talks about these people as being the ones who have not defiled with women, for they have kept themselves chaste, which means pure or innocent. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These are the ones who have been purchased from among men, as first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And finally it says, and no lie was found in their mouth. Now, of all the things that Jesus Christ could have communicated to John in this symbolic scenario about the church, he chose these three: free from immorality, those who follow the Lamb, and those who have no lie in their mouth. Sexually pure, pure in their obedience, and pure in their heart is really what he's talking about here. That's what the church in her glory should look like. And that's what you and me individually should look like. That's what God expects of us. The question is, as things stand right now, would you be qualified to stand with that group based on who you are presently? No one will be allowed in heaven whose mouth or heart or life is riddled with lies. On the other hand, everyone will be in heaven who keeps himself pure, who follows after Christ, and who is honest and sincere toward God. We have a guarantee of that, and that's where you want to be. Again, not pointing fingers. On the other hand, speaking very candidly about a sinful behavior that is creeping into the church and is becoming more and more acceptable. Paul says in Galatians 1:20, when he writes there, he says, now in what I'm writing to you, I assure you before God that I am not lying. He had to tell these Galatian Christians who were used to lying as a matter of habit because that's the world they came out of. And he says to them, I'm not lying when I tell you these things. And he holds God up as his witness there. I assure you before God that I am not lying. Paul is willing to let God examine him to prove his truthfulness and his innocence. The question is, what are you willing to do? When God holds you up to his word, when he holds you up to the light of his word, what does he see? What is he finding there? Is there consistency and integrity and honesty? Or is there something else? I believe you know the answer to this already. I don't have to give a sermon on it for you to know. But at the same time here, it's best to deal with this now than to wait till later. If you're not a Christian, you may be a very truthful person in what you say, but there's not the truth in you yet. That comes with obedience and obedience to Christ, and that can all change today. So there's some things for us to think about. There will be a judgment day coming when every soul is laid bare before God. In other words, fully exposed There will be no secrets, no deceptions, no evasions, no masks, nothing to hide behind. Right now, people can be evasive and hypocritical and possibly get away with it. Personally, I don't want to try to get away with it. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be a false Christian, a dishonest Christian. I'm striving very hard to be an honest Christian, and I'm asking you to join me in that pursuit, because that's the right way, it's the best way, it's the only way it leads to God. So, again, as we consider the year before us here, New Year's resolutions, resolve to be an honest Christian. That's what we're asking. That's what God is asking, and that's well within your power to do so. That's our lesson. If you need to respond by coming forward this morning, this will be your opportunity to do so as we stand and sing the song Kyle has selected for us.